From beach towels to tea towels, and from mugs to water bottles, the TNT Shop has it all. Browse our shop now at tntradio.live. Talking about issues and coming up with solutions. Dean Mackin on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
And good afternoon. Hope you're having a terrific day. TGIF. Thank God it's Friday. How good is Friday? It's just wonderful. I'm excited despite the fact I actually have to work and do something else tonight. And I'm still excited about the weekend. So I hope you are too. And we've got some terrific guests. Thank you, Chris Smith. And of course, drawing light to the fact that the bloody UK, I feel sorry for you fellas in the UK over in Ireland. They want to kill the cows now because they want to look after the planet, despite the fact that we're opening coal-fired power stations all around the world. All the smart countries are doing that, but let's kill the cows in Ireland, a country that's already undergone a potato famine and knows what it's like to go without food better than most, certainly better than most Western nations, and here they are going to do it to them again. Just absolutely ludicrous. We got some great guests this afternoon. We're going to have Bill McIntosh going to be talking to us about the border crisis. We've got a Spectator columnist who is an absolutely fantabulous fella. He writes terrific articles in the Spectator. He's multifaceted. He's a naval architect as well, believe it or not. His name's Stuart Ballantyne, and I read an article by him that we'll be talking about this afternoon. Not only does he have a terrific sense of humour, he gets it. He gets it just like most of us do here. And most of those in Labor, Liberal and the Greens could only hope to understand. The other one we'll be talking to is one of our regulars, Ian McRae, Sydney radio icon. And not just that, if you're listening in the UK and you think that's a bit Australia-centric, well, no. What we'll be talking about this afternoon, and it's all for you people over in the UK, and he was one of the guys. Remember the movie The Boat That Rocked? Well, forget the movie. It was BS. He was one of the guys in the 60s doing pirate radio off the coast of England, and we'll be talking to him at length about that. I've got so many questions. It's going to be great. So get ready. We're going to go back in our hot tub time machines this afternoon and do that. I've got to quickly play this audio. It's of Senator Alex Antic. And for those of you worried, and I really am, I don't worry about much, but I do worry about this WHO pandemic treaty. If we sign up to it, they could literally be coming to your door, holding you down, injecting you with mRNA poisons, and it would be legal. Our sovereignty out the window, and it's coming to a country near you. And for those who thought it was gone because the Liberal and National Coalition, yeah, they would have gone ahead with it in December. They were ready to sign off, but cooler heads, more intelligent heads prevailed internationally, and it was put on hold, but only put on hold. Let's hear what Senator Alex Antic had to ask yesterday. Oh, a couple of days ago.
Can we have an update about where we're up to with Australia's position with respect to the pandemic treaty?
Yes, I was in Geneva last week. Those negotiations on a pandemic instrument, the word treaty is not actually in any of the text at the moment, are ongoing. They're at a relatively early stage, but they've set an ambitious target of completing those negotiations by this time next year.
Right. So why then is Australia enabling a centralisation of powers with the World Health Organisation and a watering down of Australia's own medical response and pandemic response under the guise of furthering global health, I suppose you'll say. But why are we signing up to that?
The pandemic, Senator.
So we're quite happy with bricking in that lockdown masking mandate approach and giving the keys to the fortress, to the World Health Organisation, to dictate terms to our medical institutions.
I think that misrepresents the nature of this treaty, Senator.
Yeah, I think it does. To be very clear, Senator, none of those things apply. I'm familiar with various groups around the world who are peddling that falsehood. That is not anywhere in the text of the current.
This instrument is going to become binding on the Australian legal framework for pandemic response, will it not?
Only if it goes through all of the mechanisms that need to be taken into account for such an instrument to be binding. And there is nowhere in any of the negotiations where it says that sovereignty will be for decisions made by sovereign nations to be influenced by this. This is all about sharing of information and sharing of resources. They're the two key things.
But we saw during the last pandemic that the international health regulations did cause an effect on the Australian response. It was, I forget, maybe even yourself, who told me that that was the very reason why Australians were stopped from going overseas during the pandemic. So there will be, clearly...
the reason Australians, we took border measures, was a local decision made on the local health advice. In fact, the WHO was not particularly strong on border measures at the time. As Professor Kelly said, this treaty and the international health regulation revisions, they are protocols that we certainly, as Professor Kelly said, sign up to share data, but there is no requirement for nations to cede any of their sovereign powers. We will still retain our powers to make decisions on our own borders, on our own public health and social measures. Certainly we would like the world to be much more united and coordinated in their approach to pandemics, and there was a lot of differences across the world in the last pandemic, and I think we would like to see a more coordinated approach, but no country is going to cede their sovereign power of the government of the day to make these decisions.
It will be Senator very difficult. Antic, just one last question.
Time to rotate the call to Senator Roberts.
Just one last question.
One last question, Senator Antic.
If this is passed, however, Australia will be very difficult for Australian health bureaucrats and politicians to avoid being compelled by the World Health Organization's approach to a pandemic. Yes,
I don't think the World Health Organization can compel us at all, Senator.
But it will be very difficult to resist.
We would feel obliged to justify why we were not complying with an agreed protocol, but we would not. We have no requirement to do that.
We'll show the usual spine.
Thank you, Senator. Senator Roberts.
And no doubt, Malcolm Roberts have had some equally interesting questions. We'll be finding out what they were on Monday when we speak to him. Will it be legally binding? Antic asked, and the answer was only if it goes through. Wow. Be afraid. Be very afraid. Bureaucratic BS and backpedaling, nothing but. And just answer the bloody questions. Well, we know the answers, but we want to hear you say it. We want to hear it come out of your mouth. And I literally am worried about that. I am truly worried. We need to get active. We really do need to get some better people in. Yes, don't miss out on a thing. Be sure that you download the TNT Radio app from either the Apple App Store or the Google Play Store so you can easily listen live to us anywhere at any time. Available right now to download, keeping you up to speed right here on TNT Radio.
Talking the big stories.
Our country has a lot of problems.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Nothing better than talking to an old friend. And he's new, but he's old. Well, he's young, but he's, I love him. That's what I'm trying to say. Didn't do it really well, did I, Jeremy? But I'm going to talk to him in a second. Australia's minimum wage is going to increase by 8.6%, and award workers will get 5.75% pay boost in a Fair Work Commission decision. Our very own Jeremy Beck has details on the story. I'm sure you can do better on the story than I did on your intro there, Jeremy.
No worries, Dean. No, you always do a great job. It's always good to talk, Dean. Now, the new national minimum wage will be $23.23 per hour and $882.80 per week based on a 38-hour week. The Fair Work Commission says, "We acknowledge that this increase will not maintain the real value of modern award minimum wages, nor reverse the reduction in real value that has occurred over recent years." The Commission says it will end the alignment between the national minimum wage rate and the C14 classification wage rate in modern awards, arguing that the C14 rate is too low and no longer constitutes a proper minimum wage safety net. Instead, it will realign the national minimum wage with the slightly higher C13 classification wage rate in modern awards. And after that, it will lift the C13 wage rate by 5.75%. This means the national minimum wage will lift by 8.65% from the 1st of July compared to last year's lower aligned minimum wage rate. The decision will see a small group of workers, about 0.7% of workers are about 100,000 people on the lowest minimum wage of $21.38 an hour, getting an 8.6% pay jump to $23.23 an hour. Now, Sally McManus, the Secretary of the Australian Council of Trade Unions, ACTU, is happy with the decision. But the Australian Industry Group, AI Group, whose members employ over 750,000 people, says the increase is very disappointing. Not a surprise there, Dean.
As somebody who used to employ dozens of employees, I would be absolutely horrified that being the case. So this question, it's almost rhetorical, but it begs that I ask it, can small business afford this wage increase?
I think some won't, quite frankly. As much as it's not easy for someone on a minimum wage with the cost of living today, and I feel sorry for them, and I understand why they want more pay, because the cost of housing's gone up, petrol's gone up, a lot of things have gone up. But at the same time, a small business is struggling, and just having to pay that extra money might put some of those out of business. So it's a very difficult situation overall.
I've got a question here. I was going to ask you, are wages keeping up with inflation? But sometimes it's a matter of what came first, the chicken or the egg, because some could argue that constantly increasing wages leads to inflation because we can afford it and the market adapts to absorb that extra money. You never end up any better off. So I will ask the question anyway, are wages keeping up with inflation?
Overall, wages are not keeping up with inflation. If you look at the long-term picture, I think going back to my parents' generation when they bought their home in the 1970s, you could afford to support a family on an average wage, have dad out at work, mum at home with the kids. You could pay off the mortgage, support the kids, put food on the table. It was a simple life. It wasn't luxurious, yeah. But you could do that with an average wage. With the house prices today in Australia, an average house costing about $1 million, not to mention the interest rate, how can people do that on an average wage? They can't.
No, they certainly can't. It's going to be very interesting when I talk to Stuart Ballantyne a bit later. He wrote a terrific story and it'll cover a lot of what you said and just how much better we are off, well, we're off than we certainly are now, decades on. We appreciate you very much, Jeremy Beck. It's TNT's very own Jeremy Beck. He'll be back next hour to ask the big questions and we look forward to it. Coming up after the break, we've got Bill McIntosh and you're listening to TNT Radio.
TNT Radio's Ross Cameron.
What is a human being? We are described in the taxonomy of animals as Homo sapiens, meaning the wise animal. The animal that is distinguished from other animals by the use of reason. And it was the use of reason that gave the Greeks the feeling that the human being had a soul, because the human alone seemed to share this capacity with the divine to reason, not to be governed purely by instinct and by the behaviours of the herd. Yet we find, I think, both as we read history, but also in our own lives, that each of us is subject to both the influence of reason, but also the passions of the herd.
Ross Cameron on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
The following is made possible by Dad.
Why was the basketball court all wet? Because the players kept dribbling all over it.
The Dad joke. Corny, groan-worthy, but also one of the simplest ways to share a moment with your kids.
Why do you have to be careful when it's raining cats and dogs? Because you might step in a poodle.
And kids that spend more time with their dads grow up to be smarter, more successful.
Can I tell you a cat joke? Just kidding.
And with any luck, funnier adults.
Why didn't the skeleton go to the dance? Because he didn't have any body to go with.
Dad jokes rule. So take a moment to make a moment and give your kid a laugh. It's as easy as going to fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
That's really funny.
The conversation continues.
Our public education system, which I am now renaming our public miseducation system.
On today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Yeah, welcome back to the program. If you'd like to be a part of it and have your say, especially on the WHO plandemic treaty that I would suggest is imminent. I'd love to say it won't happen, but, you know, that went out the window 3 years ago. Oh, they won't do that. They can't do that. They did it all, and they did it to excess. And did they even backpedal? Do they apologize? No, they're doubling down because Agenda 2030, it's real. And it's frightening. It really is. If you'd like to do that, we're going to open the lines next hour at the top of the hour. You can do that. The other way, you can send us an email via the website, tntradio.live, or you can get busy on the online chat. Now, Gail's on the online chat, and she's she's asked, Dean, can't you do the show that we could see you? Well, I could, but, you know, hey, you know, seriously, I don't want to ruin it for Brad Pitt. So just assume that I look like Brad Pitt. You can do that if you like. It's not true, but hey, do that if it helps you get through the afternoon, Gail. The other thing as well, you'll be wondering why I'm sitting here doing the show in a scuba suit with a snorkel. That's because it floods here twice a year in April, May, and June, and I'm ready. I'm prepared. I'm one of those guys. I wonder if Bill's prepared for this. He's a good fellow. His name's Bill McIntosh. He's a broadcaster on Metro Danvers, KLZ Radio. I love saying that. With Quorum Radio program in the United States, but broadcasts from Lima, Peru. That's where the lovely ladies are. I know that. He's also the publisher of the Dirty Locked Away History of the Democratic Party. He's a guest booker for Patrick Bet David's Valuetainment TV, and he's a father of six kids. And no, he's not Mike Brady, by the way. In 1996, he had to flee to Colombia, where he was working as a correspondent for a British media company, where he was targeted for kidnapping and or assassination. Wow, I know him, and I didn't know that, by the FARC guerrillas. In 2005, he was widowed with five young children, got married, had a fifth boy, and moved to Peru, where his children obtained a superior education. We could talk for hours just on the education system. I've got him on the line. Bill McIntosh, how are you going?
Good, Dean. It's great to be on your show. How are you?
Mate, every time you talk, I expect you to do the American Top 40 because you sound a bit like Casey Kasem.
I'll try to think of a Beach Boy tune or something like that on request. But
so, mate, it's all happening. It's all happening at the U.S. border. You're on the other side of it, living in Lima, Peru, and the country's gone mad. It's in self-implosion mode. It's not by accident. It's by design. We've got Joe Biden, who can't construct a sentence, can't maintain his upright posture, falling off stages and whatnot, and who basically is like a living version, if you will, and only just, of Weekend at Bernie's. And if you haven't seen that, people, you need to watch the movie. It's just chaos.
Yeah, it is chaos. And let me tell you something. I remember I once saw the Colombian artist Shakira, and it was at the U.S. Embassy in Bogota. There was a line, Dean, we're talking like 1995, there was a line that was about, a kilometer long, to get into the U.S., to get into the U.S. Embassy, to get a visa. And that was a time when people, you know, realized, hey, you have to play by the rules and knock on the door and say, can I come in? And now it's just chaos. They just go to the southern border. They cross over with coyotes, with drug cartels, because they control the southern border of the United States right now. It's sad, but true. They control entry to the United States southern border. It's unbelievable. The stories that come out of it are just... it's shambolic and chaotic. A fellow I know, Stephen Williford, told me the story about how he went down there himself with a film crew, and they would literally, the drug cartels would call across to members of the Texas National Guard on the north side of the Rio Grande River and say, yeah, we've got a boatload of 35 migrants coming over. And they would come in, they'd set up a table, the Border Patrol, I'm saying, like in an informal spot. They'd set up a table, and as the people would line up, they'd say, okay, what's your name? Juan Perez. Do you have any identification, Juan Perez? He'd say, no. Okay. Well, here's your court date. Appear at this judge's chambers call it the town you want. It could be Del Rio, Texas, or wherever, and it'll be in 5 months from now, so be there, and you're at your asylum hearing. So they can basically ask for asylum. And while that's pending, which can last 5 years, they just disappear into the woodwork of the United States of America. One little interesting little tidbit, Dean, I don't know if you saw this. Russia Today reports that Javelin missiles, which are used to take out tanks, you can take down a helicopter with one if it's close enough to the ground. It found its way from the Ukraine to right near the U.S. border in the hands of the Gulf Cartel of Mexico. Because it's just amazing. What's happening now is just an absolute free-for-all. And the United States of America, which is supposed to, like any sovereign nation, protect its borders, cares more about the border in Ukraine than the border in the United States. You can't make this stuff up.
No, you can't. But especially if people like Joe Biden and Hunter Biden control assets over in foreign countries, they're likely to use your money to protect them. I think that's what it's all about. And it's funny that you mentioned those Javelin missiles, because we've got people in Russia estimating that $1 billion worth of weapons a month are ending up in the wrong hands. And the cartels down in Mexico and other places in South America are getting a hold of these things. And as they come up, some of them into America, I can just see them in a Congo line doing the limbo under these Javelin missiles. You know, as they waltz on in, welcome. And, you know, we got legal action. You're paying. Oh, I don't, that hotel's not up to my standards. I want that one. You're paying. So let's just keep raising that debt ceiling so we can welcome in people who are going to further add to the problems to the economy. Absolute. It's mad. It is absolutely mad that we have any group who would vote for this. And there they are, and allegedly, take away the 2,000 mules, but allegedly, they're the vaster group. They are more of them because they want the free money. They love the free money. And someone's going to pay for it. It'll be them and us very soon. Would you agree?
Well, totally. But the thing is, it's more us, the taxpayers, than them. Because here's what happens. The Republicans love inexpensive labor. So they love the idea of going to a hotel in Florida or North Carolina or wherever and being there. And, you know, the hotel is only paying, you know, $8 an hour to some basically an undocumented immigrant. And, you know, they're getting inexpensive labor. So what's happening is that they basically, the whole system likes to privatize the profits and socialize the costs. So the taxpayers pay for it. You go to an emergency room, Dean, in the United States, and you have weird diseases. So you're there with your little baby daughter or son, or your mother, your father, and you're online, and there are 15 or 20 immigrants ahead of you. Maybe you've just had a heart attack, you know, or just you have a severe respiratory issue. But you're online, and lots of people are there before you that shouldn't be in the country in the first place. So it's a debacle. We're seeing the collapse of the United States. And I go back to what I said about what I saw in Colombia. That was a time when people realized they had to respect the border. But what ended up happening was that people in the Democrat Party especially, they love the voters. While the Republicans like cheap labor, the Democrat Party loves the idea of getting people to come to the country and who are going to vote Democratic, right? Because they know they can get freebies. So what happens? You end up getting this tremendous mass of people coming across the border. In Mexico, you have a lot of lawlessness and a lot of suffering. It's caused by the drug cartels. It's caused by this massive open porous border that's about 1,700 miles with the United States, where there's a voracious demand for drugs. So the Mexican drug cartels have been moving closer and closer to the U.S. border. They're beyond it now. You have lookout points in Arizona, like 25 miles in, where members of the drug cartels with binoculars, sophisticated imaging equipment are able to ascertain where the police are, where the Drug Enforcement Administration is, where the FBI is. They're watching it all inside the borders of the United States. And it's basically created an absolute hell on both sides of the border, especially in Mexico. But then we see what happens. They use immigration. They use immigration to be able to flood a certain sector of the U.S. southern border. And then as they've, you know, basically tied down the Border Patrol handling this influx of 1,000 immigrants, they're sending in 2 or 3 miles, 4 miles, 10 miles down the road at a spot that's no longer being watched. They're sending in drug mules, sending in tens of thousands of fentanyl pills. We have about 80, 90, 100,000 fentanyl-caused deaths a year in the United States. This is an absolute case of utter contempt for the American people and utter, I would say, greed-induced and power-induced negligence.
Yeah, I was just going to say
the governing authorities.
I was going to say drone sales must be down. I don't know whether you know this or not, but they've got really large agricultural drones that you can buy pretty much off the shelf these days. And that's been the go-to method to get, you know, 10 or 20 or 50 kilos of drugs over the wall. But now you don't have to. You can just send it straight on up and save yourself the trouble.
Well, absolutely. And it's happening. They're doing it every which way they can. I do think that Trump's idea of the border wall was sound. It just made it harder, but they're very ingenious. They do all sorts of things to get it across, and they're usually successful, but it's never going to be a 100% successful war on drugs. But if you can keep out the fentanyl, which is a lethal, deadly drug.
It's horrific. Yeah.
You can touch it. I don't know in Australia, Dean, if you have it, but in the States, we have it. You can inadvertently, as a police officer, open up a trunk, and if you get exposed to it, you can get an overdose touching it.
It's horrible. I've seen video of they've crash tackled somebody. It's sprayed out into the atmosphere, and the police are just absolutely in a tragic state by the time the ambulance get there. It is very scary. Fortunately, we don't have that problem. Certainly, to the extent here in Australia.
Thank God for the Australians. In America, it's an absolute case of utter chaos. It's a tsunami of people coming in. We don't know if they're terrorists or not. You can presume that they are. And other people who are of military age doing who the heck knows what come into the United States to do us harm and sell drugs.
Yeah, it's amazing when you have a look at the people coming into the Western nations. And it seems to be predominantly male of what many would consider to be fighting age. It's certainly not families in need for the most part, which I'm guessing some people with an open heart and possibly an open checkbook would be okay with. But certainly that's not the case.
Well, you know, what you see are these unaccompanied minors. It's an absolute outrage. If somebody says, well, you know, people who are conservatives are trying to separate families. No. If you want to unite families, for God's sakes, don't go to the United States of America as a father or a mother and leave your children behind. And then say, well, look, and we'll send for them. Well, they end up being treated like sexual slaves, like objects of I mean, they're literally tens of thousands of kids are being raped. Because the drug cartels are totally, utterly unscrupulous human beings, and they literally have what are called rape trees. Well, they'll take the clothes of a child, strip them off, they'll have sex with a 4-year-old little girl, and a group sex, call it what you want. It's an orgy of just basically a gang rape, and these children are being traumatized for life, and then they go into the United States. It's sickening.
It's beyond sickening. And then again, here we are. If you open the border, people know, they have the numbers, they have the data, they know that this happens, and they know that when you open the border, it happens in much greater numbers. So it begs the question, you know, people such as, you know, Kamala Harris and Joe Biden, and it doesn't beg a question because we know the answer. It is the mainstream media. If the mainstream media were telling the general public of what's happening as a result of all of these things, they wouldn't be on board with it either. But no, they'll just happily go with whatever the Democrats push across the line, whatever Labor pushes across the line here in this country and the UK. And people, they will wake up, Bill, they will wake up. But by the time they wake up, it'll be too late to do anything about it.
I think it's a de facto invasion. And one thing that Joe Biden said in about 2015 or 2016, he said, you know something, we're coming soon to the day when America will no longer be a white majority country. Why does he say this? Okay, from a 10,000-foot perspective, he wants America to become basically something that's totally beholden to the Democrat Party because the majority votes Democrat. And the Democrat Party gets about 90% of its vote from black voters. And they're extremely considerate and concerned about the black vote. And it tends to be very manipulated. The schools in inner city black neighborhoods are absolutely appalling. And a lot of blacks know it and they're fed up with it. But you can't go off the plantation. You can't leave the Democrat Party because you're ostracized and totally totally humiliated and you're depersoned. Personified because they have such a lock hold on the black vote and on, you know, the liberal vote and people who are just income immigrants love to vote Democratic. Why? They get freebies. They get free things, Dean.
Yeah. So when it comes to when it comes to immigration, it's not about race, it's about culture. So I won't focus on a negative, I'll go with a positive.
Yeah, sure.
For example, if you bring in people from Asian countries, they are the hardest workers out there. They love to work and they contribute. They come into a place and they add to it. But you have other groups who come in with a handout, and again, not because of their race, but because of where they've come from, because that is the normal thing to do. And it detracts from a culture, from an economy, but it seems that they are the only people these days that they are welcoming into Western nations, because it seems to be that those behind this push are intent on the destruction of aforementioned Western nations.
That's exactly what it is. I mean, there's something going on. You can't just ignore this. Why is it that a great country like the United Kingdom is facing within maybe 20 years that it's going to become basically the Englishmen and English women are going to be a minority in their own country?
I'm pretty sure that's already happened in the UK, Bill. I could be wrong, but I think it's pretty much already there in the UK.
Go to primary schools, go to kindergartens in the United Kingdom. Who do you see? You don't see English children. You see immigrant children. So, I mean, there's nothing. I mean, I married an immigrant twice. I became widowed. My first wife was an immigrant. My second wife as well. I have nothing against them. My children are all mixed race. But the fact of the matter is, they say the dark people, they vote Democrat, they vote progressive, they vote for the welfare state. Whereas other people who learned, you know, basically Christian values about hard work and self-reliance, they vote Republican, they vote conservative, they vote for opportunity.
Yeah.
They vote for freedom. But Bill, in countries like Peru, they're different. They want something. They like a handout, although they're fantastic people, but oftentimes they like the government to give them freebies. So sad but true.
It seems to be the way of the future. And again, have a look at, and I say it a lot, but have a look at Venezuela. There are a bunch of documentaries on what happens when you introduce socialism, and it takes just a little over a decade for the financial system to implode to the point where it is irrecoverable, at which point all the assets get sold off to the usual suspects who engineered it. And there you have it. Bill McIntyre, I very much appreciate your time. I've got to get to a break, but certainly we'll do this again.
I hope so, Dean. It's been great being on the Dean Mackin Show with TNT.
You take care. Stuart Ballantyne coming up right after the break. You are listening to TNT Radio.
What brings you here?
News entirely.
TNT Radio News.
Matt Boylan here with a look at your TNT headlines. Serious concerns are growing over the health of America's aging president after the 80-year-old took a nasty fall at an Air Force graduation ceremony in Colorado. Poland is refusing to send any of its F-16 fighter jets to Ukraine because it barely has enough for itself. And it's been revealed the Netherlands is looking to buy almost 100 more Leopard tanks as well as Patriot missiles to send to Ukraine.
Don't miss a thing. Be sure to download the TNT Radio app from either the Apple App Store or Google Play so you can easily listen live to us anywhere, anytime. Available right now to download. Keeping you up to speed on TNT Radio.
And welcome back to the program. I already know I'm going to enjoy my next guest because I just read a 4-page article that he wrote in The Spectator. And not only was it funny, intuitive, intelligent, it reminded me of old school Australia. He used a word that I thought only my wife had ever, I'd never heard it, povo, you know, as in poverty. I thought that was funny and I was quite entertained by that. But the article was brilliant. His name is Stuart Ballantyne. And besides being a columnist for The Spectator, he's a fellow, and let me put the light on here, is a fellow for the Royal Institution of Naval Architects. He has a long list of awards, including the ICHCA Award back in 1996, the Sea Trade Award 1970 in London, Cruise and Ferry Award in London, the Oz MEPA Marine Award, and a slew of others. He's the Export Hero of the Year 2008. He holds a Master of Philosophy in Naval Architecture from Strathclyde University in Scotland. He gets around this fella, and was awarded an honorary doctorate in science from the aforementioned as well in 2014 for his services to the maritime industry. We're going to be talking about the article that he wrote and other things. His name is Stuart Ballantyne. It's my pleasure to have him on the line. Hey, Stuart, how are you?
Fantastic. Thank you, Dean. That's a big wrap-up. I'm nearly falling off the chair here.
Mate, I was wondering, and I was spot on. I go, he's going to have one of those accents, and I'm going to hear a bit of everything of where he's been, because you've obviously been in Scotland, you've been in the UK, you've obviously spent a bunch of time in Australia, that's obvious. And, mate, I just am hanging to talk about that article. It was brilliant. And for those who have not read it, get on The Spectator and type in the, or just Google, the diminishing bank of mum and dad. And boy, don't I know what that's all about. And let's talk about that, Stuart.
Well, I'm glad you like the article, because a lot of my friends who are mum and dads from a bygone era are telling us tales of woe. And I thought, well, no one's actually reported. Everyone's reporting on The Voice and the humdrum stuff.
Yep.
But I thought, well, we really should actually pay attention to the diminishing bank of mum and dad, because in the end, that's what everyone's relying on.
It is. It's diminishing. Okay. I couldn't get over, because I've heard this story a couple of times. And for those that don't think it's real, it is real. A friend of yours who believed, and as did you, that he was dying of cancer. In fact, you hadn't heard from him for a while. You thought he'd, and I love the term, carked it. And when you did see him, he was looking terrific. Terrific. And he had subsequently given away, because he thought he was going to go the way of the dodo, basically all of his meager, but possibly substantial, I don't know, of everything he had, he'd given away to his children. As it turns out, he made a miraculous recovery and then went to those kids and said, hey, look, you know, do you mind if I just get a little bit of that back, because I'm doing it tough? I didn't think I'd still be here. And what was the answer that he got there, Stuart?
Well, it was really interesting. We were gobsmacked when he was telling us this story, because he actually was quite wealthy. And when the oncologist said, well, you know, you're not going to last the week. So he got his three adult children, who are all settled down in marriage and quite well off, and signed over one third of his will to each one of them. And of course, 3 or 4 months later, when he made this remarkable recovery, he went to each one of them, one at a time, and said, look, you know, I made this remarkable recovery, but actually I need some money to live. Could I have some money back? And one by one, they refused.
Wow.
And when he was telling us this story, I mean, we're sitting, this is a fairly prestigious coffee group. We put out all sorts of videos and YouTubes. You'll enjoy them. And we were just gobsmacked that, but the resident MD who runs a couple of medical practices, he said, listen, you guys, you got to get over this. It's because the family loyalty, or the loyalty to especially the older generation, has gone out the window. If there's money on the table, they will take the money and they will dispose of it very promptly. And if you want some of it back, because you make a remarkable recovery, it's not happening. So that was an eye opener for us.
I'd love to say that's a new thing. But I was aware of that when I was, I think, 8 or 9 or 10 years old. I have to watch how I say it, but let's just say there was a will and one relative took a lot more than they were supposed to, disappeared overseas for a little while, and then was welcomed back into the fold. And so it does happen, but now it's happening with great regularity, isn't it?
Yeah. It's, you know, the entitlement mentality from the kids, and there's a lot of disrespect. So they're not valuing the family unit as such. So my article was just really trying to address that, because, you know, what we work for, of course, is to get our kids through. And as I said in the article, behind every successful family is a mum and dad that work their asses off. Pretty simple.
It is.
Sorry. So when it comes time to look after those people that actually set up the kingdom, you should look after them. And it's really important that the kids look after their parents and their grandparents. And that's the way we were all brought up in Scotland, to respect and honor your parents and grandparents, because they are the ones that actually brought it through for you. But of course, we've gone through this period of prosperity in the 70s, 80s, 90s, but now it's going the other way. And when I see the mums and dads, or the bank of mum and dads, as I called it in the article, it's diminishing. People are saying, well, we should be a little bit more aware of this, because the kids are out for everything they can get.
Yeah, and I don't know how true the old saying is, you know, be good to your kids because they choose your nursing home, because these days a lot of mum and dads are doing the reverse mortgage thing, so there will be nothing for the kids. And after you hear stories such as that which happened to your friend, you can understand them doing it.
Yes, that's right. And I think the moral of the story, I think, Dean, is you've got to find yourself a good cruise ship and go on there with your bank account details and say, well, let's stay on board the ship until the money runs out, you know.
I love that. And with a typical house in some parts of Sydney being, you know, almost $3 million, you could have one mighty fine, pretty long, decade-long cruise, one might imagine. That would be terrific. Other things that you spoke out of in your article, and I've learned a lesson from it, and it's backfired on me because I've always had incentives. You know, I said, because, you know, I grew up in a single parent family and I do okay. So I look after my son, but I make him work for it. You know, so I say things like, if you come first in your class in anything, I will give you X amount of game time. If you get to be a black belt by the time you're a certain age, I will buy you something substantial to this value. And the problem is, he keeps meeting these goals, so he has a substantial amount of time on his substantial amount of video games. He's got his black belt in karate, and he's only 14. So I think I need to start setting higher goals. But you do have to be very strict with your kids. When you give them a lot, you have to make them understand that they've only got those because dad or mum collectively have worked their asses off. But sometimes I think I might be going too far. What do you think?
Well, I think you've gone too far, because if he's got a black belt in karate, he's going to beat the crap out of you. Don't give him any more.
He's already as tall as I am, and he's 14. That's frightening, and I'm 6 foot.
All right, yeah, because the karate, it's like giving him a gun. You should have just given him a gun instead of sending him to teach him karate. He's got to hold it over you. Oh, no, I'm only kidding, Dean, but... Yeah. You know, we're lucky because, well, as I said in the article, we've got four brilliant boys and they've chosen very well. But The fact is, parents these days should not be the bank for the kids. And I've got a lot of friends who are the bank for the kids. And I've just come from a friend of mine who's, you know, his son is doing one of these PhDs in dry cleaning or something equally useless. Yeah, and then he said, I just can't get rid of him. You know, he's at home, he's 28, and he just keeps studying endlessly. But you don't want that. That's a terrible burden.
No, you certainly don't. I was just going to quote a couple of the things that you write, because you've got a terrific sense of humor. I really do appreciate it. You know, your kids asked you a question about, you know, how the family was going financially, and you responded, your mother and I are comfortable, but you guys are povo, you're poor, you're penniless. And clearly at that age, they assumed they were entitled. Luckily, four out of four sons turned out brilliantly. All left home by the age of 21, then married women much smarter than them. That was funny. That was very funny.
Well, I think that's the best thing you can wish for your kids, is to marry someone smarter than them. It's true, isn't it?
It is. They're going to produce tremendous grandkids, better than you might have expected, yes.
Yes, that's right. Oh, no, but as I said, I used to have a T-shirt, I'm your dad, not your ATM. but no, I've changed that. I'm your granddad, not your ATM, because I've got nine of them. And as I said, if any of them ring you, Dean, because you're in Melbourne, isn't it?
No, I'm in the Central Coast in New South Wales. So, no, I'm in, you know, basically Sydney, an hour and 15 minutes north of Sydney.
Oh, great, great. Do you have any boats there?
No, well, okay, can I tell you a quick story? So I bought a house on a lake. I sold an internet company. I thought, I'm going to retire at 39. I bought a house on a lake. I built a wharf. I put a boat out the back. The boat got stolen within 2 months. The house got flooded within six. The wharf floated away under the Tookley Bridge. And downstairs, which is a really nice granny flat, you can only stay down there 4 weeks of the year if you sleep with a snorkel. So it kind of backfired, and I considered I can't not work, and here I am.
Sounds a great place. So, but I'm on the water too, and I used to have a boat out there, but one of my pals liked it more than me, or he loved it more than me, and he bought it from me. I'm getting to the age where I need to upsize, so I'm buying a bigger boat. So but it's on its way.
I've got a bunch of questions I want to ask you about your work with boats, but I'm going to do it after the break because I do need to get to one. But my boat, the only water it's seen is it and the trailer were actually floating in my front yard twice last year. I need to get it out there. We'll talk about that and other things. Everyone, we are absolutely going to be back after this break, and you're listening to TNT Radio.
De-weaponizing weather with reality and perspective.
I have an interesting blog on CFACT, in case anyone wants to Google that. It says, disrespect of the weather, a major driver of the climate agenda. I think one of the big problems with the climate change agenda, and I think it's part of everything we're seeing today, is a disrespect of the past. Somehow we've all gotten the bright idea that whatever came before us was much less challenging than what we're facing today. I'm reading from the blog. And so the link is, let's just tear it down or ignore it, or better still, don't even look at what happened in the past and elevate what's going on today. Trash the past and cancel it. This is an exercise in arrogance, ignorance, and narcissism. How so? Well, what makes you think that given what was going on before, you would have had the right answer? I don't care what it is. It's easy to judge based on what you know now, or in a lot of cases we're seeing what you don't know. For instance, the kind of storms hit the United States in the 30s, 40s, and 50s, if that was happening today, we'd have people thinking some kind of atmospheric apocalypse is coming. As it is, they've successfully portrayed it as that now, when in reality, if you know what happened, you were bored a lot, looking for trouble, figuring it has to come back. So what's the moral of this story over here? If you don't know the past, you tend to elevate yourself now. You become more important. You see, folks, all of us, in my opinion, were born with a desire to be something bigger, to reach beyond our grasp. And when someone tells you you can't do that, unless you have everybody working together, guess what starts to happen? The individual gets less and less respect, and individual events are disrespected. Just my opinion. Here's a fact, though. You should enjoy the weather. It's the only weather you got. This is TNT Climate and Weather Watchdog meteorologist Joe Bastardi.
Challenging the consensus and debunking the narrative. This is Viewpoint.
Klaus Schwab has boasted of penetrating government cabinets around the world. He claimed in one interview that more than half of Justin Trudeau's Canadian cabinet are young global leaders of the World Economic Forum. If freedom prevails, the peoples of all nations will reject Klaus Schwab's fourth industrial revolution of surveillance and control and biotechnologies designed to change what it means to be human. We don't have to walk muzzled and compliant straight into a transhumanist hell. As Klaus Schwab himself admits, the new technologies of the fourth industrial revolution could intrude into the hitherto private space of our minds, reading our thoughts and influencing our behavior.
The only real prison is fear, and the only real freedom is freedom from fear. Lighting the fuse for freedom, TNT Radio.
And welcome back. I'm talking to Stuart Ballantyne, and I'm immensely enjoying our chat. He's a man of many talents, and he reminds me a bit of Sam Neill, you know, Sam Neill, the actor, because you don't think of him as an Aussie or a Kiwi or a Pom. He's just that international guy who's across everything and a man of everywhere, and he's that guy. Stuart Ballantyne, welcome back to the program.
Thank you, Christine.
I'm going to quote you a couple more times here from your article. And again, those who have not yet read it, get on The Spectator, The Diminishing Bank of Mum and Dad. And he writes, you have only to look at the university students of medium and well-off families to see them studying endlessly for PhDs in basket weaving or dry cleaning or something similarly useless in this lazy life, mostly funded by the Bank of Mum and Dad. It's a justification, I'm paraphrasing here, going further down, to rob the rich. Lots of free stuff. And he mentions the ALP and the NDIS. He absolutely gets it better than most. And it's just my absolute pleasure to talk to him. Mate, the free stuff mentality, it's taken over, hasn't it?
Oh, absolutely. But I'm lucky, Dean. I'm a little bit older than you. And I've seen the election of the ALP several times. And they always promise the free stuff. And this is geared for the gullibles. And there's more gullibles in the population than there are sensible people. So when they say, oh, I'm going to get free stuff. So Anthony Albanese's promised me $275 off from,
still waiting.
From my cost of living. And we're still waiting to see that.
Yeah, it's funny, the ALP and the Greens, their supporter base, I like to refer to them, and this is how they get their supporters, a coalition of minorities. And if you can turn all those people against the other group, oh, they're all the guys that bullied us, all the people that support the Freedom Parties and the Liberal Party, they must be the ones who bullied us, and we shall get our revenge, and they can work, we'll sit back on our asses and get free stuff. And it is all about free stuff. We've got this impending voice coming up, and we saw how ATSIC worked. That was lots of free stuff, and it was rorted. The NDIS, I see it each and every week. People who have absolutely next to nothing wrong with them. We're coming into public venues with their carers, sometimes two, and quite often I cannot tell which one is the carer and the carry, and I know them well. I know these people personally, and I literally cannot tell.
No, you hit it right on the head, Dean. We're seeing it right around the country. I've just come back from South Australia. I'm in Queensland now, and I'm seeing it everywhere. The rotting the system, but the system's there to be rotted. And while that's a good idea, and good on Julia Gillard for saying, well, we really should look after disabled people. And we have one of our family members severely disabled since birth. And we only got her on NDIS about 2 years ago, but she's now about 60, 62, 63. And we finally got some help from NDIS, but I know a hell of a lot of people that are rotting the system.
Yeah, I see it every week, and I 100% concur with you. There was a woman that used to come to one of the events that I used to put on, and she would be, her wheelchair was a bed, and her name was Claire, and a more lovely lady you could not imagine. And it was a karaoke event, and people would come up and sing to her. And she would literally cry. She was that happy. She had a team of two or three carers, the loveliest and most genuine of people. And I could not be happier for her to get all of that money and more and more. She absolutely deserved it. It improved her life no end. But I have other people, and I consider them friends, who come to these events around the place, who literally come by themselves, who drive themselves, who are insanely capable and certainly more capable than most of the, able-bodied people, because they do have a disability, but it is such a minor disability. And then I see them sometimes come with friends of theirs who are also happen to be their carers getting paid at the same time. These rorts have got to stop. They have to stop.
Absolutely. We had Pauline Hanson as one of our guest speakers at our little MTG, which is our Marine Therapy Group meetings. Yeah. This is trauma counseling. This is trauma counseling for guys who have lost their first boat. See? Yeah. So we have serious community stuff going here. And she was one of our guest speakers. We have lots of them. And she said, look, it's just amazing. She's been trying to bring it up in the Senate. The system needs to be trimmed back. If there's a way of figuring out to rot the system, people will do it, but that's not the idea of the system. But I'm with you, Dean. So
the problem is, I think they're trying to bankrupt Western nations. So what they do is they get things, and it's like a Chucky doll. It's like a Chucky doll. It's nasty. It's not nice. But if you wrap that Chucky doll in a suit that makes it look like a big, cute, cuddly teddy bear, you dare not plunge a knife into it because it's so cute on the outside, and they make it look great. They make us feel that if we were to end that we'd be ending it for people like the aforementioned Claire, who is highly deserving, and your child, who you said was so deserving. And these are the people that we need to look after. But those who are rorting the system, they're part of the problem. They need to step up and say, I don't need this care anymore. Keep that money and give it to the deserving people. But they're doing it across the board, whether it be climate change. And again, I mean, I'm sitting here, I'm on a coastal lake, I'm looking at the water, and it is literally the same level all the time. The only time it ever goes up is when the water's trying to get back into the ocean from the runoff area because it's been raining substantially. It's all BS. We know it. You go down to Sydney Harbour, you look at Fort Denison, you look at a photo of it from the late 1800s or early 1900s, and you can see the high watermark on the brickwork. You can count the bricks down. It has not gone up 1 millimeter in the last 120 years. And here they are expecting us to believe that which we are not experiencing personally.
That's right. Well, Dean, we did put out a little YouTube, 2 minutes and 30 seconds, about the global warming and sea level rises. And I've done these ship designs in 47 countries. And of course, we have to pay attention to the mean sea level. And we've done a lot of roll-on, roll-off ferries. And I've checked in 47 countries, and it's not happening. And in that particular little YouTube, I said at the end, you know, Greta, you really have to find it, as the Swedes are not up to it, you really have to get yourself a Norwegian boyfriend, a big, hairy Norwegian boyfriend.
How dare you?
And get up the mountain and get a smile on your face and an end to that blah, blah, blah crap, because all this is nonsense.
Well, wouldn't that be nice? I mean, you know, their go-to poster people are Al Gore. That's been proven wrong. And Greta Thunberg, who, I mean, actually, I don't have to be nice to her anymore because she turned 18 not that long ago. So I can be nasty, but I won't because I don't need to be, because anyone who's seen her, I think, would make an accurate assessment of her. Stuart Ballantyne, we've only talked about a fraction of the things that we could. So I'd love it if you'd come back sometime real soon.
Absolutely. No problems. It'd be a great pleasure. Good to speak to you, Dean.
Thank you, Stuart Ballantyne, a fellow Scot. I can say that. My dad's from Paisley, and he's living here in Oz, doing it tough. We're doing it tough. All you in the UK. In fact, you're welcome. Come on down. In the meantime, continue to listen to TNT Radio. We've got a bunch of terrific guests coming up, including Ian McRae, who's going to talk about the good old days back in the 60s, doing pirate radio off the coast of the UK. Back after this.